When US President-elect Donald Trump was campaigning for the top job at the White House, one of his promises was to bring back working-class jobs that have been lost to technological advances impacting manufacturing, cars, electronics, all that sort of thing. Here in Australia, our Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, has repeatedly talked about the importance of innovation, of being agile. How the sayings go, in the wake, obviously, of technological disruption. Well, it looks like the advances we saw this year in technologies, including artificial intelligence and the way we do business, are not going to slow down anytime soon. We're going to look back now and look forward, but we'll start by looking back at the big tech stories of 2016. But also try and speculate on what's to come in the year ahead. We're joined this morning by news editor at IT News, Ali Coyne, and our technology editor, Peter Marks, both of you here in the studio. Lovely to see you.
Good to see you, Hamish.
Nice Thanks to have some me. Company here. Let's start with computers, which look set to take more than just factory jobs. They're now getting good at reading, writing, driving. Even the role of supermarket cashier might be at risk. How much has artificial intelligence actually improved in the last year? Let me start with you, Ali.
Look, I think it's still very much at the stage where we're trying to work out its potential. The analyst firm Gartner does this thing called the hype cycle for emerging technologies. And artificial intelligence and virtual assistants are still very much at their infancy, where it's still going to be about 10 years until mainstream adoption. So I think people largely are still trying to figure out what the potential of artificial intelligence is at the moment.
Peter, the people that are designing this technology, are they giving much thought to the impact it's going to have?
Well, and that's, of course, the thing. When will AI, machine learning start to take jobs? I mean, there were some big breakthroughs this year. AlphaGo, Google's engine, beat the Go master, Lee Sedol, in March. And Sedol himself was stunned at that result. Go is a much more complicated game, insanely complicated game, much more so than chess. It's interesting how, for a long time, people said, well, if computers could ever win at chess, then they would be intelligent. Once they did win at chess, we went, oh, well, that's just software. Now, the same thing has happened again with Go. And the software did this not by being taught by programmers, but rather it watched thousands of games and taught itself. So rather like the hosts in Westworld, we don't really know how it works internally. And this is the kind of advance we're starting to see.
So there's big companies now, the platforms, for example, partnering with people that are working on AI. What does that actually mean?
Well, for consumers, we're starting to see things like image recognition, speech recognition got much better this year. Google's translation is now much more natural and apparently has developed some sort of internal language, meta language between languages. And, with the image photo stuff, you can upload your photos and then in both Apple and Google, you can search for sort of concepts. You can say, find me all the pictures with hugs in them or with happiness or sadness or kittens. And, this kind of, they're much higher level understanding. So basically, computers are now better at recognizing images than people are. So basically, if you want to classify images, you don't hire a bunch of people on Amazon Turk, you'd get the computer to do it. That's one job. I don't know if it was much of a job that's gone away. But there's many other jobs that are starting to be under threat. Things like, because of natural language processing, even paralegal work where you're parsing laws and regulations. There's actually a new kind of tech called reg tech joining fintech and all of these others. So jobs that really did require a human intelligence are now starting to be under threat.
Ali, is there any indication that artificial intelligence is getting beyond the point where it leads us down paths that, for example, discriminate? There's a lot of talk this year about examples where algorithms, very quickly ended up quite bigoted, for example, because of what people were or the sort of information that people were feeding into them.
I think you're referring to the Microsoft Tay
yes.
chatbot there, which
I couldn't remember its name, but yes, it became pretty nasty pretty quickly.
It did. And to be fair,
what happened?
I think
because not everyone else will remember.
So Microsoft developed this chatbot, right? And this type of technology learns the more you chat with it or the more data that you put into it. That's how it becomes intelligent. And Microsoft put this chatbot on Twitter, which we can probably agree was its first mistake. And people on Twitter did as people on Twitter do, and they trolled the bot. And that ended up that the bot became hugely racist and misogynistic and was somewhat of a disaster. That's probably a funny example of AI gone wrong. But it's interesting because you've seen, I think it was last year, Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, two of arguably the smartest guys in the world, signed this open letter with a number of really prominent AI people in the industry saying, guys, let's be really, really careful about where we go with this. Let's not build something that has the potential to become more powerful than humans and end up in a, you know, kind of Skynet situation.
On the other hand, people kill a lot of people. And a good example is on the roads. I don't know if you've seen, there's a video floating around at the moment of a Tesla, which is watching the traffic ahead and predicts an accident about to happen. Two cars ahead, rings a warning alarm and hits the brakes. So this actually saves the driver from crashing into a two-car collision ahead on the road. Driving is one of the examples where I think AI will do a better job than humans. Yesterday, Uber announced Uber Transport after purchasing the Otto company, which runs self-driving trucks. Now, things like road transport, there's a great example of trucks are grinding up and down our highways at high speed. The drivers get tired. That's a perfect example for computers to do a better job than humans.
So what happens when technology goes wrong? There were some pretty big bungles in technology this year. What did we learn, Peter, from the failure of the online census, for example?
Well, the census fail was, I can't think of a more public embarrassment in terms of a project. I guess IBM was the vendor. They were paid a lot of money and they're a name vendor. But I think that proves that you still have to take responsibility for the project. Centralized web services are not good at big bang events. And anyone who thought the census was going to be spread out over several weeks, given that we were all encouraged to go home and at 6 o'clock log in and do the census, that was sort of destined for trouble. And of course, the thought that they weren't going to be attacked, I don't know, obviously that's a political thing, it's going to be attacked. But the big failure for me was the fact that they tried to use social media for customer support. They had a Twitter handle and you could talk to them, and all it did was say, oh, try again a bit later, try again a bit later, when in fact they turned the thing off themselves. So I think if you're going to do support on social media, it needs to be authentic.
And Ali, what do you think? What's the sort of standout failure this year? Is it census fail?
Oh, it has to be. Absolutely.
What about Samsung?
Oh, well, yes. That's a whole other kettle of fish. I think with the census, I think it's fair to say the disappointment there was that IBM and the ABS spent 5 years working on this. They had 5 years of preparation. To not expect that you were going to have a huge flood of traffic on the day of the census when everybody got off work was that's just a complete, lack of planning, really. Yeah, the phrase kind of don't put all your eggs in one basket comes to mind here. You've got the ABS relying entirely on an outsourced IT vendor for a solution. There was the report from the Prime Minister's cybersecurity advisor was absolutely damning. There was really bad contract management. There was, lack of proper processes and all this kind of stuff, and it all just boiled over into one pretty big bungle, as you call it.
You both mentioned Samsung just now. They had this exploding phone, basically. That hurt them a lot, didn't it, Ali?
Well, that's the interesting thing. So it's had it will definitely have a heavy financial impact.
Yeah. So 17 billion, right?
That's what analysts are saying. Samsung said 3 billion just from the recall alone. Analysts are saying, because they haven't reported their financial results yet, so analysts are saying that could climb to 17 billion. So there's no doubt financially it's hurt them. But there was an interesting Ipsos poll conducted last month in the US, which found that despite all of this, taking into account people's knowledge of the exploding phones, Samsung...
Is any publicity good publicity?
Well, this is the thing. Samsung phone owners will still turn to Samsung if they need to get a new handset, despite the fact that Samsung's put out exploding phones. So
I think Apple has had a bit of a boost this year. Now, Flurry announced yesterday that of activations of new devices over Christmas, Apple was 44%, and the second one was Samsung at 22%, so about half, exactly half. So I think Apple's done well. Their phone this year was not a big improvement over last year, so no doubt there have been some Samsung users that have gone across. But that's a big divide to switch from Android to iOS is all your contacts have to move, all of that kind of stuff. So people are kind of locked into these platforms now. It's a bit like the old days of Windows versus Mac OS. We've got Android and iOS as two separate worlds, and you are locked in because all your photos are there, all of your data is there.
Samsung is famously a comeback kid in the technology market. Given where they have been in history, you would think they could come back from something like this.
And they're in many businesses. They're not just a phone company. If Apple could be criticized for anything, they're very much a phone company now. Samsung, of course, makes screens and all sorts of amazing
washing
technologies.
Machines, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. Toasters.
Yeah, so they don't have all their eggs in one basket.
Yes.
to coin a phrase. I want to talk about hacks, because that's really been one of the biggest sort of features of technology in the news. news, at least in the mainstream news this year, from Mark Zuckerberg to the World Anti-Doping Agency, of course, to the Democratic Party, maybe even the entire U.S. election. Some of the accusations. Have we actually learnt anything more this year about hacks and how they happen and what the capacity of state-sponsored hacking actually is, Peter?
Look, the hacks, they weren't just hacks this year. They were revealed this year, but many of them date back many years. LinkedIn had a breach from 2012 revealing 6 million accounts. MySpace, 427 million. Tumblr, Dropbox, 68 million. Yahoo, I think they've now up to 1 billion, and that's a hack going back to 2013. I think we know about these hacks because Russian hackers are offering this data for sale on the internet.
To who?
Oh, to people who want to use those accounts. Of course, if what gets leaked is your username, typically your email and your hashed password and maybe things like your security questions. And that, of course, means that if you're unfortunately commonly foolish enough to use the same password on multiple sites, then your password has been leaked. And, of course, they can then try that in a dictionary attack on another site.
Right.
And
But I got one of these emails the other day from Yahoo saying you've got an account that's been hacked. I don't even remember having a Yahoo account, but I obviously did at some point.
Well, it could have been Flickr and been brought in or something, and that's a problem, of course, with acquisitions. The
accounts is it actually anything to worry about? I mean, is it just ultimately meaningless data?
If you've ever used the same password on more than one site, then
Never.
I can see it in your face, Hamish. And we've all done this. And, of course, the more secure passwords have to be, the more difficult they are to remember. So I think, you know, the answer is don't do that. Have a password manager that makes up a random password and stores it for you. And the other thing a lot of sites do now is allow two-factor authentication. So when you go and log into, say, your Gmail from a new machine, they'll send you a text message and give you a code that you have to use. The benefit of that, of course, is that you then notice that someone is trying to get into your account. I mean, even Colin Powell fell for a fake email from Google that said, your account is under attack, click here to change your password. He clicked it because it looked so authentic.
Which is the same thing that the guy in the Democratic campaign, John Podesta, fell for. Yeah, it was exactly the same thing.
It's called spear phishing. So you've actually had a phishing attack against an individual.
Ali, anything that you take away from what we learned this year about the hacking?
Don't reuse passwords.
Is it as simple as that, though?
Well, no, but that's the first thing that you can do, absolutely. Like the Yahoo and LinkedIn hacks specifically were at least partially made possible because of reused passwords.
But you have dozens of these accounts. How do you...
Use a password manager.
This is like an app where you can keep them all.
Effectively, yeah. I mean,
I keep them all in the back page of my diary. I shouldn't say that.
Don't tell.
No.
But I would lose them otherwise.
If you can remember them, great. If you don't have to write them down anywhere, that's perfect. But that's not always realistically possible, right? So a password manager is a great second option to that.
Let's look to the year ahead. What's going to change our life, our world next year, Ali?
Well, we're going to see more hacks, absolutely. We had the biggest Australian data breach this year with the Red Cross Blood Service. That's the worst one we've had to date. Obviously, that was really personal, sensitive medical details. Mm. And that will continue happening. We'll continue to see technology trends like the Internet of Things and connected smart homes. That will continue. And with that comes security because, as we saw just last month, there's this new botnet called the Mirai botnet, which basically turns unsecured Internet of Things devices into this big network of bots. Yeah.
For people that don't know what the Internet of Things is, those are products in your home that are connected to the internet that you can control via apps, via your phone, whatever.
Correct. Yeah.
Things like light bulbs, thermostats, locks, all of these sorts of things. And unfortunately, people put them in, but then never bother to update the software. So we're already seeing them being used in distributed denial of service attacks. But I think there is some good news coming up this year.
Yep.
I want to end on a downer. I mean, I think that there's some disruption we're going to see. Things like hearing aids. The hearing aid business is an absolute ripoff at the moment. People are paying $10,000 for a hearing aid, which has less electronics in it than an AirPod from Apple. And so Bose has announced Hearphones, which is using their noise-cancelling technology to do a hearing aid. We're going to see more accurate geolocation. Europe's just launched the Galileo satellite network to compete with the US GPS and Russian GLONASS. Now, it's going to offer GPS geolocation down to the centimetres, which means, of course, within lanes when you're driving. USB-C, I think, is coming of age. We've had a bit of pain with Apple basically dropping all the other ports. But look, in my book, USB-C is such a great standard. It's now got support from Lenovo, from Samsung, from Apple, from Google. And I think we're just in this pain period where we don't have plug-in devices that have it.
Do you think this year will be the year, though, that we engage more with the tech bosses in a sort of political, societal sense? You know, we are starting to get more of a mainstream conversation about, hang on, are the Zuckerbergs of the world these kind of crazy utopian, you know, idealists that think that technology is the solution to everything, but are in fact creating these kind of uncontrollable empires to which we've all become kind of unwitting participants?
Well, I mean, Facebook has certainly changed everyone's lives, and not just for the good. There's a lot of depression to be had out of watching everyone's updates. And I do think we do need regulation of these things. It's so easy for a platform to just dominate the world. I think the fact that Trump, one of his first public meetings was with all the tech leaders. Now, I know he's trying to encourage them to bring back all the billions of dollars, $2 trillion, I think, which is held in foreign tax havens. But yes, they are leaders in our society, and they are now bigger than the oil companies used to be. So that's where the money is. But the impact on society for good and evil is dramatic.
That it doesn't even address the 40% of jobs that are supposed to go in the next 20 years or whatever it is. I mean, it's crazy stuff.
I think Become a robot technician.
Couldn't imagine anything more boring. Sorry. Ali Coyne, news editor at IT News, and Peter Marks, app developer and our regular tech editor. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Hamish. Have a great new year. It's 22 minutes past 8.